Why spend thousands on a basic will when you can get access to legal help for around a dollar a day? With Legal Shield, you can put a full estate plan in place, including a will, health directives, and powers of attorney to help protect your family and hard-earned assets. Sign up today at LegalShield.com and get 10% off our annual plans. It's finally simple and affordable. Legal Shield. Real lawyers, really affordable. Sign up at LegalShield.com. That's LegalShield.com. Legal Shield does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Well, the potential return of the Milibands to prominence, finding a place for Angela Rayner in government, and unrest on the back benches over gender equality. They're just a few of the challenges already facing Andy Burnham following his election as an MP before he heads to Downing Street. On the other side of the political divide, Nigel Farage has been coming under pressure too. So there's plenty to talk about in UK politics. And I'm joined now by Mark Paul, who is London correspondent with the Irish Times. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Claire.
And this is fascinating to see what's happening. So the story of the Miliband brothers goes way back. But now I read that David wants to come back after 13 years in the United States to take a really big job in Andy Burnham's cabinet. What's happening?
Yeah, so David Miliband is being tipped as a potential foreign secretary in Andy Burnham's incoming government. Now, David Miliband has been the foreign secretary before under Gordon Brown between 2007 and 2010. But if you cast your mind back to then, he went for the Labour leadership. He was effectively outmaneuvered by his brother Ed, which at the time destroyed their relationship. So he never got his wish to lead a Labour party. He left, he went to New York and has been running a charity there, the International Rescue Committee. But himself and his brother Ed, who is one of Andy Burnham's closest advisors now, and they have reconciled to a certain degree, and it seems that David Miliband may be back in the frame for a return to government as foreign secretary. Now, for that, he would have to be appointed to the House of Lords because he's not an MP, but he's clearly lobbying for the job. I mean, he's popping up all over the place in London, giving talks at think tanks and giving interviews to newspapers. So there's certainly one Miliband who eyes a return to cabinet, and then the other Miliband, Ed, is being tipped as a potential chancellor of the Exchequer. Now it's not entirely clear whether or not he'll get that job, but you could potentially end up with two Milibands in the next UK cabinet.
Which, as one MP was saying, would mean that you might have more Milibands in cabinet than you would have women, and that's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, the four biggest jobs in UK politics are known over here as the great offices of state. So that is the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, the Home Secretary and the Foreign Secretary. So, of course, if you had the two Milibands occupying two of those roles and Andy Burnham occupying one of the others as Prime Minister, that leaves only one available for a woman, which will be probably Shabana Mahmood as the Home Secretary. So there's a little bit of wry commentary around that. I mean, Andy Burnham and his close team and his inner circle is made up actually predominantly of women, and his most powerful confidants are women, Louise Hague and Annalise Midgley, who basically masterminded his return to Parliament. They were both out on the Westminster scene last night. I saw them having a quiet drink on a boat yesterday evening in Westminster, as they were being lobbied by lines and lines of people who I think were probably all Labour people looking for a job.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? How does all of this fit with Andy Burnham's plan to move the seat of power, or at least part of it, to the north of England? Because the Miliband brothers wouldn't really fit with that agenda, or would they?
Well, not really, in the sense that, Andy Burnham obviously is the so-called King of the North, and he's talking about moving some of Britain's power base north to Manchester. And the Milibands are part of that Islington set in North London, that in one sense there has been a little bit of a revolt against in the Labour Party, because the party wants to return to its working class roots, or at least some people in the party want to return to its working class roots. Now, Ed Miliband, though, in fairness to him, is also seen as a big thinker on the radical left of Labour, as somebody who could, as Chancellor, put in place the financial operation, I suppose, to finance these grand plans that Andy Burnham has. So look, it'll be interesting to see if one or both of them end up in cabinet. Certainly, at least one of them will be. You would imagine Ed Miliband will be in the cabinet somewhere, whether he's chancellor or not. But if David Miliband comes back, I mean, that will be a big story. And it also speaks as well, I think, to the fact that Andy Burnham, nobody really knows what he thinks about global politics. He never speaks about it. He only ever speaks about domestic issues. But we live in a world with Donald Trump and Ukraine and Putin and Russia and all of these big things that could crash upon his premiership like a big wave. So if he effectively outsources his foreign relations to David Miliband, that might make some sense.
Yeah, I just wonder whether David Miliband might just be too good. You know, if you're Andy Burnham and you're newly going into that job and you haven't been elected in a general election, is it a risky strategy?
Yeah, well, it's not entirely dissimilar to what Rishi Sunak did when he became Prime Minister, or soon after he was Prime Minister for a while. If you remember, he appointed David Cameron as his Foreign Secretary, brought him back out of the wilderness, appointed him to the House of Lords and made him a Foreign Secretary. And that was because at the time, Rishi Sunak just wanted to focus on domestic affairs in a run-up to an election. And Andy Burnham is kind of in that position as well. He's talking about rewiring the British state. I mean, he gave a big policy speech there a few days ago, and he barely mentioned international politics at all. I'm sure he has views on all of these things and very strong views. But it might give him some breathing space to focus on those issues if he was to put a real, real heavyweight in the Foreign Secretary's role. Of course, Yvette Cooper, who's the current Foreign Secretary, she is a heavyweight in her own right, and she is somebody who helped to oust Keir Starmer for Andy Burnham. So look, maybe she would stay in the role as well. But all of this, supercharged jockeying for position in the UK cabinet has really begun under Andy Burnham's people, who are being referred to around Westminster as the provisional government of the UK.
I want to talk to you as well about Nigel Farage getting away with it for years, but now there's a change, isn't there, in the air around him. You have the donation of 5 million. He says it's nobody's business what he did with it. He could go and buy a Ferrari. And then you have this payment that he got, £22,500 an hour for promoting a gold bullion company. Has the sheen and gone off Nigel Farage?
He's definitely at the weakest point, I think, that he has been since his return to British politics, frontline British politics in 2024. He never really left the political scene, but it was July. It was the general election of July 24 before he really came back to the frontline. And ever since then, his trajectory only ever seemed to be one way, which was up. His party was up in the polls. His personal popularity was up. He was being talked up as a potential future prime minister. But now there's been almost for weeks and weeks on end now, almost incessant scrutiny of his personal financial affairs, and I think it's kind of like a slow puncture on his bike, and it's really it's damaging him, I think, slowly and over the long term. I mean, for example, the latest story this morning in the Times newspaper in London is about how he's built up in the last couple of years this £4 million property portfolio, including four homes which they have bought for cash since 2020, and that includes one home for £1.4 million in Surrey that he bought just a couple of weeks after he got that previously undeclared £5 million donation from a Thailand-based cryptocurrency billionaire, a guy called Chris Harburn. Now, Farage has really struggled to explain why he got this £5 million. He said at first that he got it to pay for his personal security, because there's a lot of people out there who want to harm him. Then he changed and he said that actually it was a reward for bringing about Brexit. And he's kind of struggled. So that's under investigation by the Standards Commission. Of course, Nigel Farage insists that he did nothing wrong. And then you mentioned this gold bullion company. I mean, he's effectively a brand ambassador for a gold bullion company. He has declared the income for that. But Nigel Farage, you know, contrary to his everyman image, he is now the second highest earning MP in the House of Commons after Rishi Sunak, his declarations show. I mean, he has huge income from GB News, from this gold bullion company, he's also had these huge personal gifts from people. So this scrutiny on Nigel Farage isn't something that he's taking very well, and it looks like Reform UK has certainly peaked, and I think perhaps Farage's popularity has peaked along with it.
Well, you know, he idolises Donald Trump, and maybe he's saying, well, if he can get away with making a fortune on crypto, then I can do similar in the UK. But he's talking to a different audience.
He is, yeah. I mean, British people like Nigel Farage for this reputation of being the kind of guy you'd meet down the pub. Now, I suppose the irony in all of that is that Farage can't really go to a local pub. He's the sort of he once said that he would, you know, he would either get killed by somebody or loved to death down in the pub. That he just can't have an ordinary life like that. So his life is much more siloed than people think, according to his ordinary man image. But yeah, that's what a lot of British people tended to like about Nigel Farage, was this sense of what they perceived as an ordinariness about him. But this scrutiny on his financial affairs and how wealthy he is becoming and has become since he re-entered politics, I think is something that, yeah, you're right, it just isn't going to go down well with the sort of people who have been voting for Reform UK recently.
All right. A listener says, I hope Micheál Martin takes a leaf out of Andy Burnham's book and moves the seat of power to Cork. The Dáil could convene in the Marquee. They'd love that in Cork, wouldn't they? And there's no reason why it shouldn't happen. Mark Paul, thank you very much for joining us from London.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.